Okay, and we are back, everyone. Thank you so much for your patience. As you could tell, we had some audio issues earlier that prevented us from continuing with the webinar as normal. But thank you so much for your patience and for sticking around. So without further ado, I would say let's get started. I can see that many of you are still here, which is great to see because we are talking about a very important topic today. But first, of course, introductions. My name is Alina Simons. I'm a content marketer here at SpeakUp, and I'm also going to be your host for today. Now, the topic that we are going to look into is actually dealing with the high complexities of creating successful SpeakUp programs. And one big topic is also trust. So we're going to be doing a bit of a deep dive into the concept of trust during our conversation. Now, as you could see, I'm not here on my own, but I am very excited to be joined by an absolute expert on the topic. Welcome, Wim. His name is Wim van de Kerkhove. He's a professor for business ethics at the EDEC Business School in France, and he has more than 20 years' experience researching whistleblowing. Before I'm going to hand over for introductions, though, I just want to give a quick update on what you can expect from this webinar today. So the session is going to take around 45 minutes. And as you should be able to see on your screen, there's a chat box as well. And that means that we would love to interact with you. So if you have any remarks, questions, or thoughts that you would like to share with us in the next 45 minutes, we would love to hear them. So please feel free to use the chat box. And at the end of this webinar, we also have some time allocated to answering your questions together with Wim. So definitely stay tuned for that. So Wim, welcome. Thank you so much for joining our webinar today. I'm very much looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have. Could you just introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Yes, hello everyone, and thank you, Alina, for inviting me for this webinar. So I've been researching whistleblowing for about 20 years. First legislation and protection, and then more recently shifting from whistleblowers to those within organizations who handle whistleblowing reports. So you could say those at the receiving end of whistleblowing. In most organizations, that's compliance officers, but you have other roles as well. So in general, integrity professionals. And I think, you know, in today's webinar, we're going to be looking a bit into a new study I did with some colleagues, and we looked into the challenges that compliance people and integrity professionals face with in making their systems trustworthy. So we'll give a bit of the insights. What are the difficulties? Why are they actually these difficulties? And perhaps how are people starting to deal with that?
Great. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about the study that you've conducted. And you already mentioned trust. Again, this is going to play a very big role during our conversation. And first, before we continue with the specifics of the research that you've conducted, we would love to hear from you at home, from our audience. We have prepared a poll for you, and we would love to know what the biggest challenges are for your compliance team in terms of handling whistleblower reports. So you should be able to see four options on your screen. We have managing confidentiality, meeting leadership's expectations, maintaining transparency, and then we have one more open field. So if you have any other challenge that you are dealing with in your day-to-day life, please specify, and we are very curious to hear about, the challenge that you're facing. Now, before we revisit the results of the poll, I'm actually quite curious about, and I'm sure the viewers are too, about the research that you've done. Could you maybe just give us a overview of, the main findings or, the things that you've investigated in that study?
Yeah, so the study consisted of, I mean, we had conversations with people who oversee or who play and have an operational role in internal whistleblowing systems and channels. These came from different organizations on four different continents, but so we had engineering and banking. Those were multinationals, but we also talked with people in hospitals, and there's a government agency in there as well. And so we had conversations with these people around what channels do they use, how do they handle reports, what does the process look like, but also what works, what doesn't work, etc. And one thing we learned from that is that compliance people spend quite a bit of time and effort in trying to make these channels and systems trustworthy to different internal stakeholders. So there's top management and board, there's middle management, and then there's employees. Yeah, that was what the study was about.
Yeah, really interesting. And you know, you mentioned all of these different stakeholder groups already. I can only imagine the high complexity of having to manage and balance and navigate through all of these different perspectives and needs as well. And especially, you know, managing the different expectations of all of these stakeholder groups can quickly turn into a sort of balancing act, I imagine. Now, before we move on, I would love to see if our poll has been answered. And yes, I can see that it's a very close call, actually. But the biggest problem or challenge that compliance teams or you at home are facing when handling whistleblower reports is managing confidentiality. Wim, what do you think about this result?
Yeah, these are interesting results. I mean, it's good to see, you know, I mean, all, yeah. Well, it's good to see. I mean, sorry, there's some this challenge, but it's relatively even. And then you see the confidentiality and transparency are the two main ones. And these, in the way we analyzed our data, it's confidentiality and transparency belong to a specific type of challenge, which relates to diachronic tensions. So we can go into that. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is good. I mean, we recognize it, and I recognize this from the study we did that is those kind of challenges are really the Achilles heel of building trust.
Mm. So no surprises here from your side. You've of course already mentioned the study that you've conducted, and also hinted towards that the results from this poll reflect what you have also researched and potentially also found. Can you maybe share a little bit more around that study that you've conducted?
Yeah, and you know that immediately starts going into those polls findings. So I mean, to say that whistleblowing channels need trust in order to work well is pretty common sense. Mm. We're not really saying anything when we say that. So what we did in our analysis is we unraveled this notion of trust. And so there's different, you could say there's different types of trust, because it matters why people find something trustworthy. There can be different reasons why they find it trustworthy. And so in analyzing our data, we use the well-known framework for that. It's called the ABI model. It stands for ability, benevolence, integrity. And so you could say these are different signals of trustworthiness we can send to try and make other people trust us or a particular thing. And so they are different types of trust. And what we find is there's two main challenges in making your whistleblowing channels trustworthy. One relates to diachronic trust tensions. So that means diachronic, it's across time. You send you send trust signals to the same stakeholders, but at different moments in time. And that's where issues of confidentiality and transparency, the difficulties, that's where it comes in. And the other type is asynchronic tensions. That is, you send different signals to different stakeholders at the same time. And that's a tension that, I mean, might imply you're sending out contradictory signaling. So those are the two tensions. I mean, to give a quick example of the synchronic tensions, is boards would expect quick, high-level summaries, but your employees, when they think of reporting something, they're going to expect full attention for their individual case and very detailed feedback on their individual case. And so those are different expectations coming from different stakeholders, and you have to cater for both.
Yeah. So that obviously puts compliance professionals in a fairly tough spot, right? Because they have to manage not only tensions between different stakeholder groups, but they also have to make sure that they're continuously signaling trust throughout the speaker program. So indeed, very, very challenging. Now, of course, you have, so to say, a 360 insight because you've also done research into the whistleblower, but then you've also more recently shifted your focus towards the people who are then actually receiving and dealing with the reports. Could you maybe tell us about what happens, for example, when compliance teams overpromise on, might it be confidentiality or transparency, because that's something we've also seen in the poll, in order to meet board expectations, for example?
Yeah, well, you know, the overpromising is that's the big problem. It's a good diagnose. I mean, there's lots of risks, but overpromising, I think, is one of the biggest risks. The thing is that we tend to overpromise confidentiality, and we think we have to do that in order to get people to trust us enough to make a report. But then, you know, if we can't deliver on that, people are going to be either disappointed or they might actually feel betrayed. And we can look at what exactly are we saying, what words are we using, but I think we also need to look at what sort of sentiment are we creating, what sort of expectations do we allow a potential whistleblower, so our employees, to have. You know, if we signal that it's going to be a one-to-one confidentiality, that's not the reality. Because often, even at triage stage, there's two people looking at it. If you do start an investigation, there might be four people knowing who the whistleblower is. So I think we have to be very careful as to what sort of thing are we promising. If you want to take further steps, it might be required that the person who raised the concern actually comes forward. And so the over-promising is like, what do we have at the end? If we promise too much in the beginning, we won't be able to deliver on that in the end. And so I think that's really a problem. You have the same with transparency. You know, what are we saying at the beginning when we try to encourage people and say, yeah, if you have a report, make a report, use the channel, speak up. What are we saying that's going to happen? Say, well, oh, we're going to give you feedback. We're going to give you informed. And very often there's under communication to a whistleblower. But even, you know, you can't give the full details of an investigation to the person who made the report. It's simply, you cannot do that. People might get frustrated at the end. We noticed that this is really the Achilles heel of a speak up system or a whistleblowing system. So we think we have to overpromise, and so we're shooting ourselves in the foot. Maybe the good news is that perhaps to a large extent, this is a problem we create ourselves. But there's trust signaling at the beginning. We shouldn't forget we need to manage that trust whilst we're investigating or doing a follow-up. You know, what sort of contact is there with the whistleblower? And then at the end, we'll need to close a case at some point. So I think the main advice is really to, at the end, you know what the limitations are, and that should be your anchoring point. That's your benchmark for the trust signals you sent at the beginning. Because I think, you know, if we can communicate what the limitations are on confidentiality, and that is also going to create enough trust at the beginning to get people to actually use the channel. So the solution is simple, you know, don't overpromise. So sorry to put it so in an oversimplified form. I really appreciate the complexity of being a compliance officer. I know. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. But hearing such straight to the point advice, of course, is also great to hear, because I can imagine, you know, what you also mentioned before, that the pressure that might comes from board expectation in terms of a case number you have to ideally meet might push you into a direction where you feel the need to overpromise. Now, those are, again, two conflicting expectations or needs that create quite the conundrum for compliance professionals. But again, maybe, because this was already great advice that you have been sharing, can you maybe give us some more tips on how compliance professionals can actually manage the different tensions or expectations between the board and the people who are actually ultimately handing in the reports.
Yeah. So Alina, those would be the synchronous tensions, right? We need to signal to different internal stakeholders at the same time, and they have different expectations. I think managing those expectations is important. This isn't a problem we can fully solve. That's, I think, part of the job, you know, managing those different expectations. Your internal stakeholders, they have different positions. They play a different role. They will always have different expectations. Employees will expect you, or will want you, to listen endlessly, listen to their concerns, and you're the one who can take the system is able to take their concerns to top management, because they don't have the access. That's the expectation. And for top management and board, they just primarily want to say, okay, number of reports, how quick is it resolved, etc. So when you, as a compliance person, you have to balance that. But I think balancing it's not in the sense of meeting halfway. I think balancing is more of create clarity, and you try to educate every internal stakeholder about what's the perspective of this other internal stakeholder. Because even if it's well meant, they are going to have different expectations, and because they work differently with it. So I think the one point for advice would be in training to really explain the process of handling. What happens if someone makes a report? What is being done? What's the role of the compliance person? What does the back office look like? Give them insight into what they don't see. But also, it's about try to explain to top management what's the perspective of the employee who makes a report. And maybe somehow to your employee say, okay, you know, what is actually going to go to top management in what instance, et cetera.
So it sounds like clarity and honesty and also transparency is really the key to building successful whistleblowing programs, which of course you might choose to go for a speaker program because you want to create more transparency within your organization. But now it sounds like often it is a bit neglected that when you do implement speaker programs, that of course that's a continuous process and it doesn't automatically create transparency for the reporter, but it needs to be a process behind it as well, a goal on how to create that clarity for them on what to expect. And from an employee perspective, it makes a lot of sense, right? I would also feel more confident handing in a report or reporting on misconduct if I knew exactly what to expect to happen afterwards. Now, Wim, of course, as we've heard, you have more than 20 years experience in researching whistleblowing. And I'm also sure that you've gotten some exclusive peeks behind the curtain of a few whistleblowing programs around the world. And I have to say, I'm quite curious, and I'm sure that our viewers are as well, about some of the observations that you made during that time. Can you maybe share an example on a whistleblowing team that maybe has gotten it right or not quite right that you can share with us?
Yeah, I think what I see a lot is people underestimate the importance of frequent communication with a whistleblower, where that is possible, of course. But I think the other point is I do see a lot of compliance people and this is the pressure they're under. They're not the problem. Their problem is how do they convince the board of the importance of putting effort into this? And I see that a lot, perhaps too many compliance people play along this number game with the board. An anecdote is this is an organization quite big, 15,000 people working there. Talking to the compliance person and they say, oh, last year we had 16 reports. And a compliance person says, this is far too low. It's probably true. It is quite low. But that's not the important thing here, because actually, out of those 16, 80% actually had good information. They could start an investigation. And of the investigation, 3 out of 4 were actually substantiated. So that's pretty good. And so I said, okay, so what happens if next year you have three times as many reports? And say, oh yeah, you know, I would need to get more resources to actually do the investigations. And yeah, that's going to go slow because, I mean, you could see the internal dynamics would have been complicated. And then, I mean, my advice is like, don't insist on just getting the numbers up. It's really important to what you get in, the reports that are made, really manage them well, because that is what's going to build trust, not the numbers. Because if you have more reports and you can't do a proper follow-up, you're setting up the organization to fail. You're also setting up the whistleblower or whoever speaks up to fail, because you won't be able to follow up. So the point is, it's not really the numbers, it's the quality of the follow-up and the handling process that really matters. And organizations that do it well, that really have built a trustful culture around that, that is exactly what they've done. They've spent time and effort into this follow-up and the handling process.
Yeah, really interesting. And thanks for sharing the story with us. And I'm sure this is also probably relatable for at least a few viewers, I can imagine. And it does also show that the good old principle of quality over quantity does hold true in this context as well, even though, as we've also heard, this approach might also, again, clash with the expectations of different stakeholders within the organization. Now, I think this is a great moment to turn to the audience again, because we have another poll prepared. So it should be visible on your screen. I'm going to read out the question for you. Anyways, let's see. So what is the biggest challenge when dealing with different expectations in reporting? Is it managing reporter and board expectations, building trust and follow-up, or protecting organization reputation? Or is it avoiding disappointment? I'm just going to give you a moment to answer, because we're going to have a look at the results together with Wim right after this. But we can already see the results coming in. Wim, are you surprised by the current developments in the poll, or is it as expected?
No, they sort of, okay, we've got that reporter and board expectations. That's now... it's the highest at the moment. Okay. Building trust and follow up is there. Okay. There's very few on protecting reputation.
Yeah. And yeah.
So, okay.
That's quite surprising for me personally.
Well, yeah, if it's not a worry, that's good.
That's
you know,
good.
We don't want
good.
Extra
yeah.
worries.
We have been asking for the biggest challenge, of course.
And of course, they might be related, right? Building the trust and the follow up and avoiding disappointments. You know, that can, of course, overlap.
Yeah. Okay, I think the results have settled, and we can see that managing reporter and board expectations is the biggest challenge. Maybe you can share what compliance officers can actually do to improve. Now it's gone. To improve the management of the different expectation.
Yes,
so maybe you can share some practical tips on what, you know, the audience, for example, can do to improve the management of reporter and board expectations. I think that's something we have also slightly touched upon already.
Yeah.
But maybe you have some additional thoughts.
Yeah, I think this is perhaps an additional task that the compliance or in the, maybe a challenge that... we need to get explicit about. I think that a key moment to address this would be in training. You have normally we see training as this is the moment where you sort of get the person to or you create an ability in someone else to do something. But maybe training is also the moment where you get someone else, you get an internal stakeholder to understand what it is you need to be doing. So it's really about explaining what that handling process is going to look like, how long it's going to take. So creating, it is that managing the expectations. So That could be one way in which you can manage reporter and board expectations. Because don't forget, right, also your board and top management needs training on this. But I think the other point is, and this is specifically on managing reporter expectations, it really links to the one that came out second, to building trust and follow up. So often when I speak to compliance people about follow up, they say, okay, yeah, well, no, we did follow up on that one. Because they mean, we didn't investigate, there wasn't enough information or whatever. But anything you do is follow up. Okay, so a follow up could mean, we just make sure that it's in our database of speak up events, but it was anonymous, so we can't go back to the person who spoke up, or we did put a question in the system, but the person's not looked back, etc. So all of that is possible, but that is also follow up. So think about whatever you do is follow up. Where it is possible, you should keep contact with the person who spoke up. So develop some clear protocols as to when you will make contact, what you will do in these contacts. Because giving feedback is any kind of signal you give. Feedback doesn't necessarily mean the details of the investigation. Feedback is also any signal you give that we are taking this seriously. So it could be, your automated message could be when the system is first used, it's an automated message. Then, you do want some personalized message, but of course you can already have established blocks of what sort of information are you going to give as to where to get support, where to get additional information, advice on, make sure they don't breach their own confidentiality, etc. So I think that, and you really have to time it. And even if you have it timed out to actually do it, you have to make sure you actually do it. It's not difficult, but sending those signals, I think, is important, because you're at the end of the process. You are gonna have maintained trust. And that's going to make it more acceptable for someone to know. They will already know that, okay, they won't have the full details, or these are now the next steps. Mm-hmm. So signal timeframes, what possible outcomes can be. If you can do that, I think you are going to be managing trust. You are going to build trust and follow up, and that is also managing reporter expectations.
And the last one, avoiding disappointments, I can imagine also
that
as well. Yeah. And so in a nutshell, wherever it is possible to enter into, not treating the whistleblower channel as a one-way street, but to also try to open enter in a dialogue with the reporter, in the sense that at least give them, wherever possible, status updates on where the case is progressing, and then also beforehand already communicating what can be expected of the Speak Up program.
Yes, because I think, if we have a culture where people speak up during the meeting or open, if you have that, great, wonderful. But, if someone uses any kind of channel to raise a concern, it can be quite stressful.
Yeah.
And if they don't hear back, it's the black box for someone. In experience, a black box, you feel lack of recognition. Is someone listening? What's going on?
Yeah.
And so anything that can avoid that is actually going to make sure that someone feels that they've been heard, they've been listened to. Even if it turns out that there's not enough information, or it couldn't be substantiated, or whatever, that is going to make it more acceptable.
Absolutely, great. And this already brings us to the last question of this webinar, unfortunately. Yeah. But you've already mentioned the keyword training before. But I would love to ask you to share a little bit more details on what you mean by training exactly, and how training can also help optimize the way speak up programs are managed.
Yeah, I think you know the organizations I was really impressed with in how their handling process and also the cultures they've been able to build, not instantly but you know over a certain period of time, of course, where really they were saying we emphasize process in our training. So we sort of avoid the black box. This is our aim with training. It's not about encouraging people to use the channel and say, yes, you know, it'd be fine. And of course we have our zero tolerance, full confidentiality. So no, it's that we don't overpromise. We just explain if you make a report in a channel, what happens? How long does it normally take? Why could it take longer? What could be the possible outcomes? So it's really about creating a realistic perspective for someone if someone's going to use the channel. At the same time, in the training for top management, for example, it would be educating your board and your top management about when people use a channel. Is it about quick resolvement? Well, you know, it's about good resolvement. So what are the sort of expectations people normally have? What might have happened before they used the channel? And so these are realities of organizational life that your top management or board doesn't necessarily have. But I think you as a compliance person, this is an asset. Although how difficult your job is, the asset is that for Speak Up, you know the different concerns, worries, and expectations that your internal stakeholders have. And I think that if you can bring that into your training, I think you're doing a lot in building culture and building trust.
Great. Yeah. And this is also, I think, a great conclusion because it does show that building trust and creating successful speaker programs is something that is possible. Now you, of course, also mentioned that in order to do that, being aware of the different tensions, the different expectations is the first step. And as we've also heard today, a big part also plays, being honest, not overpromising. That was a very clear advice from you. Don't overpromise. And just be transparent as possible, also with the reporters, but also with the board on what can be expected from the whistleblowing program that you've implemented. And then, of course, also giving frequent, if possible, wherever possible, frequent status updates as well on how the case is progressing to add on to that transparency and trust. And last but not least, training is very important. Also mentioning, which I think is really interesting, that it's not just about training the employees or external stakeholders on how to use the tool, but to also train, compliance teams on how to actually follow up with the cases that are coming in. So that's really, really valuable. Now, we've already mentioned in the beginning of the webinar that we will have time for questions, and the time is now. So we're going to look into the chat box to see if any of you had any questions for Wim. Before we do that, though, I just wanted to mention that before we conclude the webinar, we would love to hear your feedback on today's session. You will receive a very short feedback form. And we would love to hear your thoughts on today's session. And it's going to help us a lot in terms of improving the future webinar experience. But without further ado, I would say let's have a look.
Okay.
Indeed, we have questions. The first one is by Anna, and Anna would love to know how to manage risk of retaliation because this might be outside of compliance control.
Yes, it might be. I think at the same time, you can manage the risk of retaliation within compliance control, and that would be at the point when someone makes a report. The first follow-up could try to be, what would be the risk of retaliation? So what I've seen in some companies do is they ask a couple of very simple questions, but they try to see what is a team composition? Would there be anything that even if they would be, if they would do an investigation, how easy would it be to guess who spoke up? Is there a worry? Is the person who raised the concern, are they worried for retaliation? And where would they expect it would come from? And I think, doing that initial assessment of where would the risk be of retaliation, I think is useful. It also sends quite an important signal that, hey, we are taking this serious. I think organizations that start thinking about protection at the point that someone says they're experiencing retaliation, I think that's too late. You actually want to be ahead of the game a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I hope that starts answering the question there.
Okay, let's see. In terms of time, I'm going to just quickly jump into the next question. Yep. We have a question from Veronique. I hope I said her name right. But Veronique is wondering, our challenge in my company is to improve the checkback rate. How can we encourage reporters to check back in the tool without putting pressure on them, especially when the report does not include enough information to follow up?
Yeah. I think, I'm going to say, Veronique, thank you for that question. And it's a question I've received a couple of times. It's people saying, yeah, it's fine. We've got the technology to have this anonymous two-way communication, but people don't check back in too. So, if you're facing that, then definitely that needs to be part of your training, that you say, this is the problem. Perhaps you would want to make sure people, when they make a report, they do check back in. One of the things you could say is that when you close a case, you're also seeking feedback from the person who reported as to what was their experience of the handling process. So of course you would have to do that as if you signal that, you would actually have to do that, but because then what you could do is say is actually have a comparison of saying, look, people who do check back in, and those would be the ones that once you close it, you could also ask them feedback on the quality. What was the quality? What was your experience of the process? You can bring that also into your training. And that would encourage, or that could encourage people to, when they make a report, at least make the effort to check back in. Warn them that, when they make a report, it's very usual that the compliance team has additional questions. It's very difficult for people to know what sort of information compliance teams need in order to figure out, is this enough to have an investigation? It's typical for people to overestimate how much information they give, and compliance people say there's nothing useful in here. So rather than train them on what kind of information you need, I do understand you would want that to be part of. Say that it's a standard thing that you always need additional. You need to ask additional questions in order to do your job right. So they should check back in. I hope in my rambling here, I've been giving you a couple of inspirations as to what you can do.
Yeah, definitely. I think it also ties quite nicely back into what we've also discussed about creating transparency on what to expect after a stakeholder or a reporter has handed in a whistleblowing report. And then just putting that already forward, knowing that, hey, we can actually check back with each other and ask for more information, that will definitely indeed help with the checkback rate, I can imagine. We have another question from Lorraine. How involved should reporter and company be in agreeing investigation terms of reference, and if external investigation commissioned, how do we know what good looks like?
Okay, there's a lot in there.
A lot to unpack. I think first is agreeing on investigation terms.
Yeah. Well, I think, whether even if it's an internal investigation or an external investigation, the person who's going to do the investigation needs to have enough, say, autonomy or independence or impartiality. You know, you recognize their expertise. It is good to have, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily advise that the reporter sets the terms of reference for an investigation. I think it's useful to involve the reporter, but mainly I think the sort of approach would be, okay, if we investigate, how do we make sure we don't blow the, well, we don't breach the confidentiality? So we want to investigate this in a way that makes it as difficult as possible for people to guess, okay? Yeah, to make it impossible for people to guess, I don't think that's realistic. But you sort of want to minimize the risks there. I think to that extent, it's useful to have the reporter, to have some contact with the reporter, some ideas as to who would know what. I mean, it could help an investigation, of course. But I do think the investigator and their expertise, they need to be in control of what is the investigation going to do. So I think the level of impartiality and independence that the investigation team has, whether it's internal or external, I think is important. Also for whatever the investigation shows, you know, it needs to be the good quality.
Okay, thank you. And we have another question. I'm just moving straight on because, of course, we want to answer as many of your questions as possible. The next one is from Joanna, and she would like to know, they would like to know, what should be considered out of scope in terms of reporting? Is it best to use a speak up platform for all concerns? Also, all concerns received should be registered. We would love to hear from other companies.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I think as an organization, you need to start with this, and you need to start where you feel comfortable. And you, I mean, that would be your top management and boards who makes the decision. Where they feel comfortable, that's what they need to start with. And if that's very narrow, let it be very narrow. But as you gain practice and confidence that, hey, you know, the speak up channel, it's actually okay. You know, with all the worries we had, okay, they don't really turn out. It doesn't turn out to be that bad. As organizations gain confidence, we see that they actually broaden the scope. I'm currently working with an organization that when people speak up directly with, there's two contact persons. When they speak up directly, they put it in the database as so that they can, everything they do on every case can get logged. And so they would put it then manually in the database. So that's an organization that says, yes, you know, if we even have person-to-person concerns, yes, you know, we put that on our platform because it helps us to get an overview of, you know, what have we been doing? How are we actually handling this? Where are our bottlenecks, etc.? So they're already taking that to the next level. I've also worked with a company that said, look, you know, it's quite big, so we have a lot of team managers. Do we want our team managers to log every question, every concern they get? No, maybe that's not the culture we want. Fine, but I think, you know, that every organization needs to make its own decisions also as to what's possible, what's feasible. But it can be useful to actually have something honest, so that you at least know it has happened. I think that's important to see where are the flows of speak up. Mm. Is it person to person? Is it anonymous? Is it through the platform, but it's identified? What's the contact like? So I like, you know, the previous question on check-in rates. This is really good. It is really good to have an eye on. Yeah, not every organization looks at that. Been in companies that okay, how many anonymous? Oh we'll have to look. Okay.
So it sounds like indeed using it for different purposes can create some really valuable insights for for the compliance teams, right? So, yeah. This unfortunately brings us to our very last question.
Okay.
Pavel would like to know if we can have the full version of your research on whistleblowing pitfalls.
Yes, we're still in a review process. We've written this up as an academic article at the moment. But yes, it will be available at some point, and hopefully in the near future. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Really looking forward to doing a deep dive on that study. Definitely.
Yeah.
This also brings us to the end of this webinar. First, I want to say a very big thank you to you, Wim, for taking the time to joining our webinar today. I really enjoyed the conversation that we had and the insights that you gave. And of course, I also hope that it was valuable for the audience. And of course, I also want to thank you for tuning in today and for bearing with us in the beginning of this webinar regarding the audio issues. But we are very much looking forward to hearing your feedback on this session. So we mentioned already earlier, you will receive a very short questionnaire at the end of this webinar via email where you can just share your thoughts. And again, this will really help us improve the webinar experience for next time. And I think that wraps it up. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you, Wim. And we're looking forward to seeing you next time.